What's so great about? What's so great about? Who? What's so great about? 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 What's so great about?
Hello and welcome to What's So Great About, the podcast that asks great questions and gets great answers. My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very well, Terry, very well. And you?
I too am well.
Good to hear it, pal.
Of course, we are talking about What's So Great About Nicolas Cage, and we're going to be talking about Snake Eyes. But before we get into that, Andy, we've got another guest on the show.
Hey.
Our guest today is an actor, stand-up comedian, and the first recurring guest on the podcast without the last name Cantwell. It's Peter McGann.
Oh, yeah, I was like, hardly now. No,
we've had Tony on a few times, but
Yeah, thanks Peter, very much for coming on.
How are you?
Thanks for having me again. I'm excited. I'm very good. I'm excited to talk about this one now. The pump is primed to talk about this one.
I wasn't sure because I knew, like, Wes Anderson had a real following, and when Terry said Nicolas Cage was the next season, I was like, are people going to be into that? Like, but people really are into it.
Like, of course they are.
Like, oh no, they are. They are. Yeah, big time. I wouldn't be too au fait with the later ones, you know, the kind of ones that...
Nobody is. Nobody's au fait with fucking Kill List or whatever, you know, those tax dodge movies that he's
doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the ones to get him out of his dinosaur bone.
Yes, exactly. Like, I'm reading a book called The Age of Cage at the moment, and it's literally, it goes through his career from his first movie all the way through. So, like, I'm, like, late 2000s now at it.
Oh, the good stuff.
Well, that's it. Like, he's kind of like National Treasure 2, they're talking about. It was like those were his real big hits, big surprising hits in the 2000s.
Yeah, but
after the crest of the wave of like post Oscar, post Rock, Face Off, Con Air, literally you can stick Nicolas Cage's name and you'll get a movie opened, which is kind of what Snake Eyes
post Oscar did. He win an Oscar?
Yeah, we've talked about this, Andy.
Leaving Las Vegas,
95. Yeah. And then you were
and
like...
And why aren't we covering that one?
Because I said, read the synopsis, and you were like...
Oh, yeah.
A rider tries to drink him. Oh, God, I don't want to do this.
It's a bit heavy.
Yeah, I know you, and I did. I know you, and if we had to do that one, I think you'd be a sad boy.
Yeah, I'm really in the presence of two actual film buffs here, so it's really great when we have a guest on, because... I don't have to, because my synopsis of these movies is just like, I don't know, I didn't really like that, and Terry's there pulling his hair out, so it's nice to get someone else who actually knows what they're talking about.
I'm having a recorder leg, right?
Ah, okay.
A mango raspberry recorder leg. Never had one before. Recorder leg is that one of those pear cider with jobs. But a mango raspberry.
Go on then.
Mango raspberry cider.
Go on, how
is
it?
It's a little sweet. It's a little sweet.
He hates it.
You'll have one. I don't know. You can't get pear cider. You can only get... There's one type of pear cider, my beloved Fizz cider.
Which with a name like that, you know it's got to be high
product.
Quality. Like, Fizz.
Norwegian.
You can get more than that for pear cider, no?
And it's gone. It's gone, man. Copperberg doesn't do pear anymore. None of them. They take it. Maybe there's a reason why they took it off the market, but I'll still try and find it. But I know, like, you were pretty big on doing Bringing Out the Dead, Pete, and we couldn't scheduling wise, we couldn't make that happen for you.
Well, what happened was, I missed when you sent me on the list originally. I somehow missed Snake Eyes, I went straight from. Oh, what? Oh, you threw it in after, did you?
No, I think it was on the list, but I think at the time, you said, oh shit, I didn't see that in the original.
Yeah. So I, like, not that I would have loved to talk about Bringing Out the Dead as well, but I thought that that like the little contrarian in me would be like, oh, that's too Scorsese, too, even though it's not one of the most well-known Scorsese.
It's actually the Scorsese I've like seen least, like the big Scorsese, like I've seen least. So right. I'm really excited to revisit it. Like,
I love like it's incredible. It's a jaw dropper. But like when I saw the Snake Eyes, is one where you're like, oh, no one will want this, but I know that I like it. I'd have something to say about it.
And let me ask you, because are you a big De Palma guy?
Yeah, this is a whopper. Like just last week, last Monday, I went to see In the Lighthouse, Blowout on the big screen.
I fucking just watched it like over the weekend in preparation. Did you? Yeah, man. Oh, fucking. Yeah. I would have loved to have gone see it on the big screen.
It was the big screen. Like I've seen it a couple of times before. Like it's one of my favorite films. But like seeing it on the big screen, it was like, oh God, this is back when like movies like that were like made exclusively for the big screen, so you're just seeing way more. Like it was incredible. I was nearly crying.
Andy, let me hit you with the premise for Blowout. Right, John Travolta plays like a sound. He plays you essentially. He's a sound recording technician for the movies.
Right,
and he's doing like horror movies, and like the producer of the movie or whatever is like, oh, the sounds like. Of the wind don't seem proper, like so he goes out to like record the wind. He's out, basically just out on a bridge in the middle of nowhere, and then he sees like a car accident and a death happens, and it's like a big kind of conspiracy kicks off from there. And there's so many bits in it of just John Travolta like chopping up fucking film reels or like piecing sound
process stuff,
and it's like YouTube before YouTube, these kind of things. You're like, I could just sit here and watch this. I don't need a plot. I don't need a whole fucking conspiracy plot. But it's fucking deadly.
And like, can I ask, is De Palma big on conspiracies in his plot lines?
There's a good few, like in like those two especially, and then like conspiracies and kind of, I suppose, like people. Subterfuge and things, people trying to create the illusion that one thing happened when something else has, and like, you know, Mission Impossible. And
that was the other one before, like 96 is Mission Impossible, 98 is Snake Eyes, and like, like Mission Impossible, if you go back and watch that one, it's like so twisty turny, and like maybe listen, you know what? Let's just fucking get into the movie. Please. Let's just get in and talk about the movie. Because I'm like you, Pete. I'm busting to talk about
it. Let's do it.
Yes, yes.
Okay. I'm on TV. Hi, Rick Santoro. Hello, Richard Santoro. I'm Ricky!
And I am the king!
A pepperoni, sausage, Canadian bacon. Listen, why don't you just get the deluxe and save time, all right? Look, I got business. Call me back in 5. There he is!
There's the man whose life I want!
And now, the distinguished Secretary of Defense.
Great idea. Put a flashing light on your head while you're at it.
But why are you so uptight? It's fight night!
We're running security at night. I got a lot on my mind.
Watch carefully.
That seem right to you?
Kevin, that is right in so many ways.
No, I mean beautiful woman alone at a fight.
A crime is about to be committed.
Now listen to me, Mr. Secretary. I am telling you, you're the one that's going to be sorry.
A witness, and the hardest thing to spot will be the truth.
I'm a homicide detective and a material witness. You can't hold 14,000 people.
There's 14,000 eyewitnesses.
We have 1,500 cameras, 800 on the casino side, 720 on the hotel side. What are you looking for?
Exactly when they wanted you to. They miss him with that second shot.
Missed you.
I'm betting that the redhead you followed is the same person who told Tyler to throw the fight. She's one. Shooter's two. Tyler's three. The drunk who shouted the signal's four. Whoever was on the other end of that radio was five.
Five people make a conspiracy, right?
It sounds like he's conducting a very dangerous investigation.
I'm not gonna let you kill her.
Please, Rick. You're all alone on this. The house wins.
That was the trailer for 1998's Snake Eyes, directed by Brian De Palma, written by Mr. Jurassic Park himself, David Koepp, aka the guy who wrote Jurassic Park. So we're going to get into a bit of boff budget and fun facts. Andy, okay. Do you care to guess the budget? And Pete, we'll give you a go after Andy.
All right, well, he's had some big hits with Face Off and Con Air, so I would imagine they're going to give him a bit of a hefty budget. Well, it's not his movie, but I'd say 50 million.
Okay. Pete?
I'm going to say 25. That's my gut instinct, so I'm just going to go 25.
If you put your hands together, you would have been closer. 73 million.
What? Where's that money gone?
Oh, I think it's on the screen.
Okay, well, we'll get to that.
There's bits in this where you're like, there's 10,000 people here.
Right.
Like, there's a whole casino's worth of people here. Like, yeah. You know?
Or the whole shaft that goes over the hotel rooms and where Gary's listening.
Yeah. Fucking brilliant.
Whoa. Right.
I can't wait. Okay. All right. Let's calm down.
Okay.
Opening weekend, Andy.
Opening weekend. I'm never good with these. 5 million.
Okay. Pete.
Go with your gut.
I'm terrible at these. I have no concept of this kind of thing. Like, it was not a success, so I'm going to say...
Excuse me.
Oh, was it maybe? Okay. 2.3.
Oh.
16 million.
Wow.
Good boys.
Yeah. And I did hear this was a bit of a flop.
I think in comparison, because if you think about it, like, Cage has done... He had that whopper year or 2 years of The Rock 96, Face Off and Con Air came out within the same month of each other. And they're all huge hits.
Wow, within the same month? He must have been the biggest star of 1997.
That's it. Like, you know, and then this is the next year. And even I remember the video tape in Extravision when I was younger. It's like, it's just his face.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is going to be another one. This is another action movie or whatever. And compared to those guys,
right?
It's not.
It's considered more of a flop and compared to them. Yeah flop exactly. is probably too strong a word.
Yeah, but all right. Let's try the domestic total.
Okay, what did you say the opening weekend was? 16?
16.
75.
Okay, Pete.
74.
Unbelievable.
55 million.
Okay, he gets it. That's my tactic. Yeah. Undercutting the first answer.
And then worldwide total?
180.
230.
103 million. Lads.
Hey, okay, not so hot overseas, huh?
Yeah. I mean, but if you think about it, off a budget of 73, you're making 103. You're not losing.
It's fine. Okay. Well,
think about them. Think about the type of movie.
Like, where did Tora Brian De Palma end up in like director jail? Because like that was the beginning.
This is the beginning of the end. This is his last really good one. Because like Mission to Mars is next.
I didn't see that one. It's on Disney Plus. Let me give it a look.
See, I remember as a kid being like, "Oh, hey, here we go," and it's Gary Sinise again, and then like just being like, "Oh, what is it?" Like by the end, it's. Kind of aliens, but maybe kind of gods. I don't know. Like, it's just real. Yeah.
Right. Out there.
I think that was then. Like, he hasn't made a big movie in 20 years, really.
Right,
like,
okay.
He made one with fucking Noomi Rapace and Rachel McAdams. Where,
that is a mental one.
Yeah,
passion.
Yes.
That's deranged.
Yeah. And it's like they're lovers that are trying to kill each other? Or
yeah, they work. It's like kind of. The fashion industry, workplace rival, you know, like that kind of like all about Eve.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
Mentor right. turns on the mentee.
So he doesn't make your average sort of movie, this guy, basically.
No, that's what makes him fucking deadly, though.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why Tom Cruise picked him to do Mission Impossible.
Even back then, Cruise was picking the directors.
That was Tom Cruise's first movie as producer.
Right.
And he was like, he got the rights to the franchise.
He's good at that, isn't he? Like,
Well, think about it now. Oh, Pete, I forgot to fucking ask you when we started. I'm going to put it in here before I get to my fun facts. Because this is a thing I want to ask all our guests this season. We're halfway through the year. What film have you been to see in the cinema that you've enjoyed the most?
Oh, okay. Well, truth be told, I haven't hit up that many in the cinema for the obvious ones. The obvious reasons. That Blowout was my correct, actual answer.
Yeah.
But if in terms of like films released
for this year, we'll say, yeah. This is going well anyway.
This is which?
I said this is going well. I didn't want to put you on the spot. Just have fun with it. It's fine.
I barely have gone to this.
Terry, I feel like your answer is already going to be everything, everywhere, all at once, or whatever that is. Would I be correct in saying
it's that? It's a tie between that and Maverick.
Right.
Oh, so you haven't even seen Maverick.
Do it, man. Go to a fucking empty cinema and go see it, and you'll be fucking blown away. Empty? Well, because it's still COVID and stuff. So like,
oh, okay.
No, I don't mind. I would like to go see with an audience, like kind of that kind of flick.
We went to see it, and it was like a third of the full cinema, and even then, you're still like, this is fucking brilliant. Like, it's cheesy, it's earnest, it's fucking brilliant because they're in the fucking planes, and like the only one that looks comfortable in the plane is Tom Cruise. Sure. The rest of them are all like, apparently they're all saying like they had like sick bags in between their legs because they like were not adjusted, like all like Miles Teller.
He's
and
a madman.
Yeah. He is
a madman.
And I know, like, we all know he's a madman, like, in general, but like I have not got one bad word to say about him on screen at all. Behind the camera is a completely different story.
No, I just mean in his role as producer or whatever. That. Like, you know, I love the fact that he was like, no, there's absolutely no way I would keep pushing this back.
Yeah.
There's no way this was going to streaming.
But speaking of movies, if there's one thing, do they still space out the cinema seat where you
no.
can't? No, they don't. That was the
I
thing.
Have I have my film.
Oh, here we go.
Cinema film, and like, absolutely see this in the big screen if you can. Highest recommendation, Elvis.
Elvis. Oh, yeah.
Baby, that is a fucking movie.
Right.
On the big screen, man. Ooh. You want to see a man's crotch thrust at you in slow motion?
Always.
Instead of fast motion.
Is that, and did that do well? Was that supposed to, like, is that?
Yeah, it's class. Yeah. I think it's a smash, yeah.
It's made over 100 million at the domestic box office, which they didn't think it would do.
Right.
Like in America. And like, it's basically, they said they're going to extend the theatrical run because really there's nothing else coming out until I think September. Like, you know, the Marvel movies are coming out, but like Thor had a big opening, bad word of mouth. You could see Elvis having way more legs because are still talking about it. You know, like,
can I ask you where you stand on the Marvel movies, Peter?
Me, I couldn't give a flying.
You can swear. It's fine.
Please.
I lost all kind of traction with them. You know, you're kind of, once you stop going to see two, then you're like, so, and you're, everything's like, fucking Zorg's in this one. And you're like, I don't know who that is. It's like, oh, you see, and I got, it was very kind of overwhelming. So I was like, I'm just going to sit this way. I got very annoyed about like traits they had, like, one of my favorite ones was that Winter Soldier one, and they do the thing where they kill off Nick Fury, and it's actually genuinely emotional, a bit of an emotional punch, and then they bring him back. He wasn't dead at all, and you're like, oh, that's it, these films.
It's like, oh, fuck me, I guess. Yeah. It's like, oh, oh, fuck me. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, there's no stakes. Okay, fair enough. And they'll just be like, they'll make it feel bad, and then they'll be like, oh, no, but don't worry, he's alive. And you're like, well, it's sometimes nice to feel those like cathartic kind of feelings. And I don't know, I think if they're pox now at this stage, I just can't truck with them now.
Phase four, we've been talking on the pod a lot about it, of like, because we did a whole series on what's so great about the MCU, because I hadn't seen any of them, like, and I think this was like by the end of phase three we started it. And I started off really thinking, like, the first few were very contentious episodes. I was like, it's fucking shite, what is this? I just didn't get it at all. And then slowly but surely, phase two and then phase three, I was like, okay, yeah, okay, I'm kind of into it now. And then phase four is just so bad, I think. And they've got, and we talk about it a lot, but like the CGI in phase four is shockingly bad. And that used to be that almost won me over a bit on CGI in phase three. I'm like, well, Marvel actually do it very well. Like, I'm not thinking, oh, that's not really a raccoon, or that's not really a, you know, something. And now they've gone completely back the other way, where it's just like, well, I'm just out of it now. Like, I was watching it.
And it's because they're treating their VX. It's like they're basically kind of sweatshopping these VFX guys.
That's what we're just talking about it, yeah.
And it's kind of like union, like
they know people are going to see it, so it's just like, well, we don't need to make it better, like
exactly. Yeah. 3 week turnover on these mad big action sequences and stuff. Like,
but
it's deranged.
Yeah,
it's not going to get any better until they stop making as much money as they are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it's true.
Well, I was reading today. It's like it's now become just content rather than
art.
And
just actual films, like toys. Before, when it was Iron Man, you know, they were teeing up stuff, and there was a kind of a marketing system in play, but it was all, they're still trying to make these like idiosyncratic films and interest, like movies that had a kind of crafted them and a structure them, and now it is literally it's all on the belt. And I think you're hearing about, you know, directors shooting, you know, if some lad's doing a Spider-Man movie, someone else will direct other scenes from it that have like Gwyneth Paltrow in it. Like, it's a total like kind of
like the,
she didn't know she was in a Spider-Man film. She's like, well, I wasn't in that. There's a clip of the John Favreau chef show.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you were. We were in it together. She's like, what was I? Like she's rocking up reading some off an autocue and bailing.
Yeah.
Like,
give me my check into it, like. And I'll get out of here. But like, I read about like Sam Raimi, who like the last movie, like I don't know if you've ever listened to that podcast, Pete, Blank Check, Rick Griffin.
I will say I don't necessarily enjoy that well, but literally today I just finished the Oz Great and Powerful one.
Oh, yeah.
Like literally today, that's gas. You know, I barely listen to it. Every now and again I'll dip in. And, like,
I went through basically the Sam Raimi filmography for that miniseries, and I was like, I forgot how much I fucking loved Sam Raimi. How he has such his own style, the way the camera moves like a fucking person a lot, and which kind of happens in this movie as well. But like for the Doctor Strange movie, there's parts of it where you're like, oh, Sam Raimi, oh, I see Sam Raimi, brilliant, oh, that's great. And then there's parts of it where it's just like, okay, that's flat and it's weird and doesn't really fit. And apparently what he has said was he didn't have the time. He'd have like two takes and he's like, okay, great. Whereas he's like, with the other, I had to prioritize what bits I could put myself into. Oh,
right.
And then the rest of it was just like, okay, well, that's just a shot with a VX background and I have to go. You know, I don't have the time because, like you say, it's on the belt. It's fucking, we have to get it out for our fans. Like, which fucking sucks, you know?
Well,
oh, I find them like fairly disgusting. And the more I learn, the more I think for my mind, they're not even good. Like, popcorn, like I love something that's like
a movie
that's like an adventure that you go and get, and like they're just not it for me anymore. Like, I feel like they're not even bothering with the sense of scale or scope or like, anything. Not actual transporting and stuff. It's all
like I watched that trailer for the new Mission Impossible, and I'm like, that trailer.
Yeah,
looks more better. Yeah, I'm like more excited to watch that trailer than I have the last few Marvel movies, like, you know.
Oh yeah, like freaking Avatar is coming back. Like I have no interest in Avatar or anything like that, but like necessarily in terms of like it's not something I go back and revisit, but I'm like, that's gonna be an
I stubbornly didn't go see it in the cinema last time, and it's one of my big movie going regrets.
It was pretty good, and I'm like, I
found with Avatar, like, that was when there was that 3D phase
that kicked off because he perfected it, like.
Yeah, and I remember I went to see it and I remember thinking afterwards, like, I loved it and I really enjoyed it, but I never want to see it again. That was my overwhelming thought. Like, I have no desire to see it again, but it was brilliant, but I don't want to watch it anymore.
Definitely like lower tier Cameron, like, if you ever
We did 90s action movies on the Patreon, and Andy picked T2 and he picked True Lies.
And True Lies, baby. That's one I've been on my mind to revisit. I haven't seen
it. My opinion is, it's very fun, but it doesn't, it's that, I would have that kind of on my Cameron list of like below Aliens, below T-War.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's that for, to me was like, maybe it's The Abyss, then True Lies, even though it's fucking fun, but it just shows how good Cameron is.
The biggest regret out of that 90s action series was not putting Face Off on it, which we covered last week, because I was only saying, like, I had this memory of Face Off as being like, the concept is mad and there's mad bits, but it's kind of boring. Like, it was anything but boring. I don't know why I ever thought that. It's insane.
An opera.
Yeah.
And like, it's so mad that like, it's such a mad, like, epic flick that I rewatched Broken Arrow there. His other, like,
yeah. Andy picked that on his 90s action movie. Yeah. The first pick on his 90s action movie once, he picked Broken Arrow and didn't pick Face Off.
It didn't work for me.
I mean, it's like not as mad or camp or operatic, but I like Broken Arrow. I like it's like a good spaghetti western or something.
Yeah.
I kind of dig the whole, like, fucking, like, desert setting and, like, Travolta, like, hamming it up.
Oh, he's hamming it up big time.
Anyway, let's focus. Let's get it. I'll get us back on track.
Go on then. Hit us with some fun facts there.
Some fun facts about Snake Eyes.
It better be fun, Terry.
I'll do my best. The opening 20-minute Steadicam sequence is not all one continuous shot.
Right. They did very good job then. Yeah, sorry.
I know. However, there are 12 minutes of a continuous take.
Whoa.
Which is pretty fucking good. Like.
And I couldn't spot where they
There was one bit this time I was keeping my eye. There's a bit where he's met Cyrus. Is it Louis?
Yeah.
Man character, and there's a camera's going around the corner, and it kind of,
that's your cut there.
You can see the cut. It's just the walls covered, and he goes around, and then he catches him on the lift or something. Right. It's all like, but it's, I was like, oh, that's probably a cut there. But otherwise, no, like, it's pretty seamless.
Yeah,
like, it's fucking that was seamless as well.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like, the kind of thing where you don't mind. You understand that there's, you're gonna be, have to, practically gonna be cuts.
Yeah.
But like, it is the entire thing is, you don't see it and you're like, oh, that's probably where they did it.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily kind of see it.
Doesn't even matter.
Jar.
The attempt.
And like, Cage is animal in that, like, in that scene. Like, he's what he must, like, as an actor, especially an actor that likes to go big, like, fuck, imagine getting that. You're like, yes.
Yeah.
I was gonna compare it because I was like, was Saving Private Ryan that year? But like, kind of the whole thing of like the opening sequence has been this big showpiece thing.
Yeah.
That kind of sets, like, the rest of the movie kind of has to recover from.
Yeah.
And like, make the argument that like, this recovers from it better than Saving Private Ryan in a weird way. As in, like, I love Saving Private Ryan, but like, you're like, it's like, well, maybe it's kind of equal fit, like, you just, that's all the people talk about when they talk about.
Yeah. That like, fucking D-Day, like.
Yeah.
And you're right, like some of the reviews for this movie were like, it's on fumes by the end because the opening is so strong, which I don't agree with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it wraps up easily. I remember jumping ahead, but like, not like the climax rather than the final kind of stretch, but it's
96 minutes and it's fucking,
when I saw that I couldn't believe it. I was like,
here's a very fun fact. Actor Please. Kevin Dunn, who plays Lon Logan, the pay-per-view anchor, said the fact that Gary Sinise's character was named Kevin Dunn caused a lot of confusion. So much so that...
didn't even think of
that. I picked it up. I was like, that guy there is Kevin
That's
Dunn.
Kevin Dunn.
Yeah. It's like, the Commander Kevin Dunn. But so much so that he was given... Kevin Dunn was given a fancy penthouse suite during filming. However, this was meant for Sinise and then registered it under his character's name. So the real Kevin Dunn had to just end up staying like a chain hotel.
So he got shafted again.
I have to say, Kevin Dunn is a very boring name for a character in a film.
Yeah.
Like, when your main character's called Rick Santoro, you're like, yeah, now we're cooking my gas. Yeah.
And then you're like, my best friend, Dunn. Commander Kevin Dunn.
Yeah. They were probably just trying to make him as straight arrowed as possible in comparison to the madness that you get.
Well, here you go, Andy. For your boy, Kevin Dunn was actually written with Will Smith in mind.
What?
But Paramount balked at his $12 million asking price.
So the character, Gary Sinise's character, was written with Will Smith in mind?
Yeah. Imagine Will Smith doing that turn. It'd be fucking brilliant.
I feel like what that would have... I was thinking about that because I read that before and I was like, double checked it there when I revisited. And I was like, how would that have worked? Because like, that would have given it up. You're like, Will Smith, it'd be jarring to see Will Smith show up in a Cage film at that, like, the height of his career, and then he's playing like his best friend. So I wonder if, because De Palma loves Hitchcock, and yes, I was thinking maybe it was like this Psycho thing where you have Janet Leigh in Psycho, and the spoiler alert, like, she's the big star and all the promotions, and then she dies, you know, halfway through the film.
It does work better, I guess, that Nicolas Cage is the name above the title, and it's just Nicolas Cage. Yeah, you know?
But if they had cast Will Smith, I was thinking there could be a cool thing to have, like, Nicolas Cage and Will Smith, and present it as they team up to solve this. This congressman's murder.
Yeah,
and then in Atlantic City, and you're like, that they pitch the movie as that, but then the reveal, like, relatively early on, is that
40 minutes. I clocked there. I was like, oh, it's like 40 minutes, and they do this reveal. And then you're like, there's still more than half the film left. But like,
I think it was smart, because I was thinking like, geez, they give, because my memory of it was they reveal it early. But I was like, actually, I think with that kind of character, that trope, you just guess. Even if they were trying to drag it out, they're like, he's gonna be the bad guy.
Yeah,
it's like it won't be satisfying if he is
who's left, not who's on. So, like, it's not Nick Cage. If it's not Gary Sinise, who's left? Is it the boxer, or is it? Like, there's nobody else that is an actor that you would recognize. Exactly, that is like, okay, yeah. Huh. One last thing is, the original ending involved a hurricane and tidal wave hitting Atlantic City boardwalk and killing Gary Sinise. ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, had, like, they'd made this giant VFX shot, but ultimately Palmer cut it because it tested terribly. He's like, I think he mentioned it on his documentary, De Palma, and they showed it in De Palma, the documentary, of like what it looked like, and he's like, and nobody bought it, nobody cared. Like,
so he was killed by the hurricane or whatever.
Yeah, I think it like floods the casino. The tidal wave floods the casino, because at the end, Nick Cage kind of mentions almost drowning.
Yeah,
and I was like, did he almost drown? It's like, not really. Like, there was a bit of rain or whatever like that. Like,
that would have been a mad way to go.
Yeah, I much prefer the other end.
Oh, me too. I think that, like, it was definitely like they really go into like biblical imagery in the whole film. Like, he's like Christ, kind of like the face, bloodied and cast out, like, at the end. And the whole, like, kind of, you know, bit, like, the whole really heightened, like, you know, sell, you know, betray for the 30 pieces of silver kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, sell,
yeah.
And then they go, like, but, like, I think I love how it ended. I was like looking at the scene, the way he goes out now, it's like it's captured on like.
Yeah,
the whole countdown thing. And it's not like a movie scene. It's not like, it feels like he looks like a trapped animal. His eyes are darting.
So good.
Like, it just feels like exactly how it will be. He's just, and he's just like, what the hell? I'm fucked. How do I get out of this? And then you can just feel when he does eventually shoot himself through the heart, it's like a sudden movement. It's not like some like big dramatic thing that it just feels like a thing. Someone shot. Yeah. Oh, it was.
And like, we talked about Face Off with like all the fucking. In this movie, the gunshots are like. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah,
you know?
I love that.
Yeah, and it's just what I love about that last bit is when he goes for the handle. And he just goes for the handle, and then it's like, stop, stop. And he's like, his hand just kind of freezes, and then he turns around, and then turns back around.
Oh.
And you're like, wow. And like, I was looking it up because I watched this movie when, remember, like, Disney Plus, they launched that Star part of it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, all the stuff from Hulu or whatever is going to be on it.
Excuse me.
This was one of the first things I saw that was added, and I was like, oh, fucking Snake Eyes, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Like, when I rented the tape with the lads when I was, what, fucking 12 or 13, because we'd watched Con Air and Face Off, and I remember watching this with my mates, and like, none of them liking it, because they're like, where's the action?
I was going to say, I bet you they hated it and you loved
and
it.
And I loved it. And I was thinking to myself, I hadn't seen it since I was a fucking kid. And when I watched it there, I was like, oh man, like, the camera work, the fucking, like, the drama, all that stuff in it. Like, I fucking loved it. That was only, I would say six, maybe it's almost a year ago now at this stage.
Yeah.
When it came on. But like, watching it again, I was like, it's still really well paced, like, really well acted, and like, the craftsmanship in it, like, that's what I mean, the money is on the table in terms of like,
well,
we're gonna make this giant production, and you're gonna let De Palma direct it his way, do it. And I'm like, so much stuff. Like, we're talking about those Marvel movies there where it's like, there's no craft in a lot of them. Like, I could have fucking done that Spider-Man movie. Like, you're not showing me in it. John Watts is not showing me any of his stuff he learned in film school. Fucking De Palma is showing me his style. He's showing me fucking everything here. I thought it was brilliant. Now, Andy, I'm going to throw it to you and tell me what you think. Because I want, we're all friends here. I want you to, like, don't hold back. If you didn't.
Please don't. Yeah, I'd be disappointed if you did.
No. I know you said before.
Never do.
Like, I know you said before where it's like, the two, you guys will talk and you'll like it and I'll say it and then I'll be like, oh, maybe or whatever. So just fucking rip the band-aid off.
Okay. This is not the movie that I thought it was going to be at all. I'll say that.
Yeah, I
did not expect that. I did not expect this. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, Andy. Come on.
I thought it was. This was the first time that I've seen since we've started doing this series of like, oh, there's Nick Cage. You know what I mean? Mm. The Nick Cage that I know. You know, or that I think I know. Like of that sort of like. Every Motor few minutes, I'm like, he definitely ad-libbed that. He definitely, you know, like, or his cadence
You're
or whatever.
You're a bomb, Tyler.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I was actually blown away by the last half an hour of this movie, where it sort of, the music in it and all,
the
it just goes to, like,
very
this
Hitchcock,
film
very
noir sort of. And I was like, because I watched the last half an hour in work this morning. I went in early and watched it. And I was saying to Kerry when I came home, I was like, the second half of the, because she watched the first half, I was like, it's very different than the first, like you were saying, like the first half, Cage is like, and like unleashed, and then as soon as he finds out about Gary Sinise, it's kind of like he's just very like
he's crestfallen, or, like,
and it's like a completely different character, but like you see, like it's really well acted. I thought, like I have to say, like and like I seen a review online saying it's a three ring circus of a movie, and I think that's
like,
but like I think that was meant complimentary, like of just like there's so much going on. I remember thinking like I was like what I was like the first 10 minutes. I'm like it, I kind of thought like. They just said, and again, I kind of like, I mean this as a compliment, but I kind of thought, I was saying to Kerry, like, it's like they stuck a camera on Cage and were like, you do whatever you want. Like, that's the vibe I got. Mm. It was just Cage doing what he wants, like, and we'll keep up with you, you know, and we'll, you know, it, I mean, like, I guess that's what you're supposed to be
following Rick Santoro around the place.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And I kind of thought, like, the first maybe 15 minutes, like, I was enjoying it, but I'm like, what? What? You know, I was trying to catch up.
What's great about it is it really is like setting up a bunch of dominoes.
Yeah.
And then when the fucking gun goes off, it's like, and just follow them and, you know, or see where the chips fall, whatever way you want to look at it.
Now, I'm like, I will say my only complaint, because I always have one, was I thought that the only thing that didn't really work for me was the whole air raid defense thing as being the thing that they were trying to stop, because you don't really see that. It's just people talking about it, and it's kind of like, I'm not seeing that in action. I'm not connected with that at all. It's just like, okay, I get it, like that's important and they're trying to stop that, but I was kind of like that, like I almost had to rewind it. I was like, oh, that was obviously an important thing she was saying to him there on the stairs, because I was kind of like, why is this, like why are they all, you know, and it's like, oh, that thing, okay, like, you know.
For somebody like, who's such an amazing screenwriter, and like he is one of the great modern screenwriters, David Koepp, like like when it is the air raid system is being falsified is the MacGuffin, it's like it's not super interesting. It's not no, and it's not the thing that like okay, it didn't bother me, but like if you were to like if you're not enjoying the movie and then they say, and this is the thing because of it. And it's like, what? Like, fuck off. I could see that.
You could see me doing
board,
that, could you?
I think the payoff of it is when he's talking about how all those guys in the submarine he let drown.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
And that's how, and that's how you're like, oh, this is, he won. Okay, that, so it's, but that was obviously later then. I think, yeah, you're right. It's like, it needs to be something. And obviously they're trying to give it something new, something that is, it's some semi-believable. It's not too
abstract, like out there. Yeah. And I was kind of like, I'm sure that is important. Like, you know, in the real world, that would be important. But for the sake of this movie, that's, so, you know, loads going on.
And the character, the character of like that John Hurt plays, I can't think of his name, but he owns the casino.
Yes.
But he's also the head of the company that does the thing. And that was like, that seemed to, like, I'm thinking it's possible.
No, that's the thing. It's supposed to be, they kind of said it's Trump. You know, which they all are. If you're, right.
That's what I thought of Trump when I saw. I was like, I guess he's got like tendrils in different things.
But also like to be like, oh, I have this big government contract that I'm. That's like a bit of a stretch. Mm. You know what I mean? Like,
did they go so extreme to talk off a double assassination? Well, it might like
that scene between John Hurt and Gary Sinise after, like, you know, he's knocked off two of his team.
That's brilliant.
And he's like, am I on that list?
Yeah.
You know, that little, like, it's not even like a quiver, but like, it's also like he also is like, fuck, maybe I, you know, am I am I like,
I am like billionaire, but like funder of this whole scheme, but like
when that was on, I was thinking like that scene with John Hurt and Gary Sinise, I was thinking like, I think this is my favorite scene in the movie so far. And then the next scene was Sinise and Cage in the booth, where I was like, oh no, this is my favorite. Like, there was a few times where in that last half hour I'm like, oh no, this is probably even better. And it was almost like they were in like a submarine or something. I got got that vibe. I know there was all this sort of, you know, the weather outside. I was like, are they still in the casino here? Like, you know, it was so vast and it was so empty. And I was kind of like, are they still, like...
It's a great setting for a movie.
Yeah.
You know, the fight floor and then the casino, you know, as a place to run and hide. It's fantastic. Yeah. And like the fact that they're like, you're pinned in when Carla Gugino was trying to get away.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, she can't get out without her identity being taken or anything like that. Like, it's from a screenplay perspective, it's great logistics. You know, there's great hurdles that have to be overcome for her. And like, you know, like you say, up until the assassination, the fact that you're just kind of letting everything wash over you.
Yeah.
You're along for the ride and you're like walking and talking with, you feel like you're walking and talking with Nick Cage. You almost feel like you're on the phone with him.
Yeah.
You know, or like,
and can I ask Peter, would this be your favorite Nick Cage movie?
After watching it today, to be hard bet. I watched it this morning and I was like, you know, you're just kind of like I watched it at lunch because I was on the clock today.
Anybody who's listening to this,
of course.
No, but when I watched, like, it, I, again, as I was saying, I, like, in my head, I was like, I love De Palma, and I've been revisiting some De Palmas lately. Like, I rewatched, and like, I'm like, in my memory, like, these incredible, like, these things I've seen since college, these incredible, wild, fucking vivid things, and they still are that, but I'm like, oh, they're so much more jaggedy and abrasive that, like, I couldn't show it. I've been recommending these films for years, and then people are like, what? And then I was like, oh, no, I see why people... I get the De Palma hate. I'm a real De Palma defender. He's one of my favorite directors, but I was revisiting the films. I'm like, oh, yeah, these are kind of rich meals that are not...
For everybody.
Like, that don't go down easy. Yeah. Like. So I was kind of expecting the same thing because I was like, I hadn't seen Snake Eyes in years. I watched it and I was like electrified by it. And I was like, this is a pound for pound great flick. I was like,
nobody talks about it though. Nobody talks about it.
No one talks about it. It's like they talk about the first 20 minutes of it, but that's it. And they don't rate it. They don't think the film holds up. I think the film really holds up. I think it holds together well. I think it, for a mystery that's like, has like a lot of like kind of.
Mystery that it gets solved, like you say, 40 minutes into it. You know?
You can solve 40 minutes into it, but like, you know, there's multiple character or multiple like kind of point of views, the different characters. You don't know what everyone's kind of motivations are, and it's all like all obfuscated. Obviously, the MacGuffin is kind of like, what? Like, these are things that throw me at the best times, you know, it, like you kind of get lost with. But like watching it today, I was like, this is actually, and it's a testament to the Kep screenplay and De Palma, like the visual story. Yeah. He's such a visual director. And the two guys, Cage and Gary Sinise, they're kind of the way they sell their relationship. I think like it's an incredible film, and I like the way that they use like it's a real good noir, which I didn't have a memory of, like in terms of just the idea. and like they really play up the biblical thing of it, but like it's I love when noir films do like that really simple, like, but like almost biblical in terms of like cost of the human soul thing of like a character needs to make this impossible choice. And like when you get to it, and I genuinely was like, so, and I knew how the more or less how the film resolved itself, but like when he gets the offer, you kind of feel for him, because he set up this big abrasive guy. He wants to be the mayor of Atlantic City.
Yeah.
He's a king of the town. He's got all these contacts. He's got this like just network where he's the head of it. And like, and he's like, he says it. He's like, I don't want to leave. Why would I ever want to leave this place?
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't hear that's it. Like, and then he's like, he gets the chance to do a genuinely one good thing in his life, and it would mean costing everything. Costing it all. And you see it genuinely breaks his heart.
And
he could sell it out and you would get it. He could sell her. He could. And I love the way they don't play Kevin Dunn as like this like, in the second he's revealed, he's like this like bad guy who doesn't give a, he is dying for a Rick Santoro. Just be predictable, as he said, just like just keep saying that your track is like, just take the money, like,
what
you
say,
like I could kill you,
that's what he's always
like,
done,
nothing would happen, but like, just take, I'm offering you, like,
what did he say, probably, if it was anybody else you'd be dead, you know, like,
yeah. Exactly.
I just, because you're talking about that, like, the end is brilliant, like how it's, you know, he's a hero. It's very much, I was getting like Bat Lieutenant vibes of like,
me too.
He gets the medal and stuff like that. Like, you get that, and then like the next thing. And what is fucking great is he's helped your man Lou. He's helped Kevin Dunn, the actor, get his break, and now he's reporting on him. Every clip you see, and he's like, hey Rick, what about these allegations? It's like his old buddy that like he went along with, you know, and like. Then at the end, where it's like, he's going to prison, you know? He's going to prison.
I actually thought that was so funny. And like, I actually laughed out loud because it was like, literally in the last like 3 minutes of the movie, he's gone from being like lauded as a hero to being found out as corrupt, loses his family and job, and he's about to go to jail. Like when he gets out of his car, he's like, come on, you know, he's like, what about the cocaine? Yeah. And I was like, I guess that didn't last long.
Gary Sinise said it, he's like, you know, people, when he's like, they're going to dig into your stuff. He's like, you're getting the spotlight, you can't hang up, you can't hold up, take the money.
Apparently that was De Palma's voice saying, what about the cocaine?
Was it?
I just on De Palma, like, what I loved in this, like, obviously the floating camera stuff, like that, when we're when, you know, and I guess we're talking about the plot, but we're talking around it, like, the whole thing is there's an assassination, Carla Gugino, basically she becomes the MacGuffin almost at times, where it's like there, Gary Sinise is trying to find her, Nick Cage is trying to find her, and there's the great scene, really inventive, I thought, for a movie, where it's like he's up with the fucking the cameraman, and they're like, they're, you know, jumping around. Your man from Dumb and Dumber, Mike Starr.
Yeah,
they're jumping around, being like, "Oh, try this camera," and then they see her. They see her with fucking Craig from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah,
and like she basically is using him to go back to the room, and the idea that, you know, they're on the elevator. Creating tension out of nothing, really, of like they're being on the elevator, Nick Cage in the other elevator, he's on the walkie talkie to Mike Starr, and he's like, like, what floor are they on? It's like, I can't see, and he's like, hold on, I'll look up what room he's in or whatever. Gary Sinise has pressed 38, Craig presses 35, then Gary Sinise presses 36, immediately comes down the stairs, he's just missed them on this fucking corridor where everything looks the same. And you're like, fuck, is he going to find them? Where is he? And then, like you say, he's outside one of the doors, and you just do this fucking amazing, like, float camera up over all the hotel rooms. And I remember the last time I watched it, I was like, man, that's fucking unreal filmmaking. I wish in the movies today you had somebody with, like, an ounce of that imagination.
Yeah.
Of just, like...
And had the pull to be like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And the studio would be like, oh... Go on,
that's it.
Like, I'm gonna show this, like, getting a load of college boys, and like, it's like all this. It's like, again, the Hitchcock thing. It reminded me, because I totally forgot this was a thing. till I watched, and it's like pure Rear Window, that like with Jimmy Stewart, like seeing all the different, just get the kind of glimpses of everything, but it's like this whole other thing going on while this conspiracy is happening. These people are just going about their life. And it's pure showmanship. Like, I love it.
The logistics of it being like, we're going to build the set, or we're on whatever it is, of like four hotel rooms back to back, and I'm going to float this over, and we're going to see it, and then we're going to come down around, and we're going to settle with Craig on the bed, and she's in the fucking bathroom.
Yeah,
you know, like, it just fucking,
and even like, even the hallways of the, like, out those, like, they look like they just go on forever. Like, you know, you just get the sort of vastness of,
I just,
where they are,
shining corridor, like, when he goes around the corner, it's like,
but like, whoop, I was like, oh, this is fucking movie making, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like, that was the thing, because like, with these sort of movies, like, I've been inclined in the past to be like, if I don't understand it, I'm just like, I don't shite. Yeah. But whereas this one, like, it kept me engaged, like you were saying, like, I was hooked from start. And even if I didn't, even like, things sort of materialize later where you, like, you see it from someone else's point of view, and then it makes more sense, you know, like that, oh, that's why he was about to go in that door, or, you know, this and that. So I kind of like it was fun, like, it was a fun movie, but it was fun putting that stuff together where you're just like, so that's happening there,
like,
now, and
mysteries like that, like, can sometimes, they can be enjoyable, and sometimes, like, you can be like, oh, fuck off. And this is definitely, because it's so well done, you're along, I found anyway, you're along for the ride. And like, the idea of, like, the amount of first person, like, the camera is almost a character at times in this, like, you know, like, the idea of, like, the boxer, we haven't really talked about fucking Lincoln. It was a fucking
brilliant character. I've never, like, the actor, I was looking him up, he didn't have a fine career, but like, this, because I was like, he has such heavy, I forgot how much, like,
I think
proper dramatic kind of presence he brings to the film. Like, the scene with him and Santoro in the hotel suite, that was like,
I love
incredible. It again, it was like proper noir, like old school 50s, like, you threw the fight and he's feeling bad about it, and it's haunting him. And like, the scene with him and the lawyer, like, in the flashback, he, like, it's all like, it's all very kind of, again, none of this, well, the latter scene was with Cage, but, or the first scene was with Cage, but like, it's all with very like, you're seeing these other, like, character actors kind of have these amazing kind of juicy kind of turn moments like that are still like fueling the script or driving this script. It's not like
that's it. Everybody's getting their piece, you know what I mean? And like, the idea, like, you feel it when he says, you know, your man's a bum and he fucking swung.
He didn't hit me. Really, like,
and he's like, but I was already too far back. And like, the music hits and he's like, I'd already given up what was me then, or whatever, like, you know, that kind of way. And you're like, you feel like how much it's weighing on him.
That he's few things get me in movies than like having to throw a fight. You're like, oh, that's,
like,
it's such a, like, heartbreaking thing.
Because they're trained to win so much, and then it's like, oh yeah. And he's like, I gave up the one thing that made me. You know, being the head witch.
You know, all these people think I'm shy.
Yeah.
And like, is there something to be said for, you guys might know this more than me, but like, I kind of like, when you get like a big actor or a big lead or something like that, like, Cage is very good at, like,
he's generous,
like,
isn't he?
Yeah, like, giving these guys the screen when they're doing their thing, you know, for as big and bombastic, especially at the start, as his character is, he's still kind of, Like when they're talking, I'm not looking at Cage, I'm looking at them, and you know, I know like
completely.
Like a lot of that is those actors themselves, but like, I think Cage has a lot to do with that as well. Like,
he does.
He loves to play, so doesn't he? To
pull. He's
he loves and to like, play. That's what you would say.
Yeah, and like he loves the craft with so much, so it's like, he'd be so fired off someone else. It's not like he's not a movie star that would come in and not like someone there who's taller than him, who's like got more jokes than him. It's like he will obviously rise to every challenge, and he wants to make
it's not good.
I feel like Will Smith would not have done that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know that, like, they have that in their contracts. Fucking Vin Diesel and The Rock. You know, you can only hit each other so many times, or they can't lose fights to each other. Some fucking bullshit like that in the contract. Some
ego contract.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, you know.
Oh, I'm sick, and you're like,
since Fast Five, because like, Vin Diesel beat up The Rock in Fast Five. And it was like, since that, it's like...
On screen, like?
Yeah, on screen, yeah. So oh, then okay. It was like...
It's the movie, though.
Like. Then yeah, that's it. It's your character or whatever. But then it was like written into his contract. The Rock is like, I can only take X amount of punches or I can't...
Ridiculous.
You know, like, grow up, like, that's, fuck off, like... It's pathetic, isn't it? Like,
that's it's literally that scene in Once Upon a Hollywood with Al Pacino, where he's like,
yeah.
At first he gets slugged by this guy, and then eventually the audience, like, it's like that scene, like in real life.
Mm. Oh my god!
Like, he's like, you get beat the heavy next week, huh? You get
yeah.
Oh.
Cage is like he's an animal in this, and like all the big stuff he's doing, like I mean, he's not. A subtle man, but like I feel like it's all in keeping with the character of Rick Santoro, and like this kind of like obviously he plays it way bigger than any other actor would, but it's totally justified. It's so much more exciting and interesting. And then when the fall happens, when he's sitting on the steps with her, and
yeah,
she tells him what went down with Kevin Dunn, and he's like, he's a different character from then on. Like he's just so miserable. And then when he's like seeing him on the big blimp thing,
yeah,
like, oh, you could just, it's just like
and you just see Gary Sinise's feet on the top step,
yeah,
and like I was watching, I was like, is that someone there? Like, because at the time I was like, oh, there's someone there. I was like, oh, is it actually? And then you just see the steps walk down, like, oh, he is there. Like,
but like there's the first time like when Gary Sinise is telling the story, and it's like, I chased the redhead up there, and then she palmed me off, and then I heard the gunshots. He hears the gunshots, and then like fires four fucking things. Yeah. Like,
through
it could be anybody. Like,
even trying to aim at the
sniper. Just like fire, and it's like,
I thought it was a silencer. It was actually like a stadium microphone, like, or something. Like, and then, oops.
I was like, if that was the truth, like, Jesus Christ, you got lucky there. Yeah. But of course,
you'd be filling out some forms now.
exactly.
I have to say as well, on the scene where Gary Sinise and Nick Cage are in the sort of booth or whatever, that like just the pain in Cage's eyes, like that sort of like I genuinely felt for him there, and I didn't think so far in our Nick Cage series, I hadn't seen that, and I didn't think he had that in him. Now, I know you guys probably are way more, you know more about, like, that he definitely does have that in him. But, like, that was the first time I've seen where he's like, oh, the hurt. Like, he's not overdoing it. His eyes are just all, like, his eyes look like they were, like, twice as big or something. Like, they were just, like, watery and just... And,
like, I don't even know if, it, like, symbolism is the right word. But just him looking at the bloody dollar, bloody $100 note, and then he's like, I never killed nobody. Like, just to himself. He's like, I might be a piece of shit. I've done a lot of fucking, you know, rip off drug dealers or whatever else I do. But, like, I have a line that I don't cross. And, like, like, fucking Gary Sinise has skipped over it many times now. Like,
such a great... I was like, don't talk to me about soldiers. It's like,
that's what makes it work. Is like, these two men... And they always say, it's like, oh, no bad guy thinks he's a bad guy. But they, like... He, like... Gary, you, like, you totally get... Kevin Dunn's point of view of this is
for the 11 people or the 22 people, whatever it was that died. So it doesn't happen
again.
Yeah,
it's a necessary evil to prevent.
And you can see there's a very subtle sort of look even in his eyes as well, where he's talking about like the 28 men, and he's like, you ever hear a man gasping for, you know, like, it's like, they don't die quietly. But that, like, there's a look in his eyes.
Pretty good Sinise, Cantwell. Thank you.
But they just widen just slightly, where you can just see the hurt for a second, and then he's trying to get it back together again. I thought that was fucking brilliant. That was so good.
Like, he was electrifying in that scene.
I'd love to see him back on the big screen doing something. Like, where is he? I'm looking him up now. He's like fucking.
Where's he doing?
I think he's on one of those fucking Criminal Minds. Like,
he's got tenure on one of those.
He's on
exactly. Yeah.
CSI NY, 197 episodes.
Best stuff, like military vet stuff. I think.
Oh, really?
But like,
oh right, yeah, yeah.
Looking at his film stuff here, like Beyond Glory is 2015. Sergeant Will Gardner is 2019. I still
believe
he's got
such a great face, though. Like, it's not used enough.
No, that's it. But the way he speaks, you know, he has this kind of like
he's got the voice to match it. Like,
you know, like,
and he seems like a decent man. Like, that's like great cast, a bit like, because he does, like, he's got the hooded eyes. He Yeah. He can play like a sleaze well, like it, like ever see like Ransom.
Ransom, yeah. It's like that, kind of similar to this in that like yeah, he's like the policeman in Ransom and yet he's the one behind the Ransom. Spoilers for Ransom.
Like,
yeah.
Like you can buy both sides of him. You can buy the face and the heel.
But you know,
but you buy the heel turn, but he doesn't play the sleaze like he does in other things. And this, that's it's like, and he's regretful when he's plugging the two in the back, but he's also, you're also like, I also buy that he's able to do this.
And that's a fucking great team where you're like, oh, he kills the girl, and then your man is like, wait, I've been shot. And I was like, well, he shot you. Like, it's like, that's probably what I would say. If somebody shot me, and like, Cantwell shot me, and I looked up and I was like, oh, my friend Andy is here. Andy, I've been shot. Help me, I've been shot. Like, this is for all these fucking movies you made me watch.
Make me watch another movie over 2 hours 30 again. Yeah. Make me watch another one.
Oh, no.
But the only thing that I thought was, that I didn't quite get as well, was the sort of, the set or whatever it was at the very end, where like maybe I miss something. I have a tendency to miss a lot in these things, but like, okay, the weather's getting worse or whatever, this big fucking arrow thing comes through where she's hiding out, that looks like a paper wall almost that she's in. I'm like, well, get out there, like. And then it's kind of like they're just out in the middle of, you know what I mean, like I was kind of a bit, I lost my bearings a bit there, you know what I mean.
You can tell like there's certain parts where it's like, we gotta go home. Let's wrap it up here. So let's just reshoot. Well, look, the wall comes off, and the news truck is just here now. And
that one was like, whoa! He's like, whoa, okay, right, this is happening now.
Yeah, and then exactly.
Or whatever it was, the policeman was like, drop the gun, you know. And then the news crowd just come in or whatever. I
have more faith now that Gary Sinise can be like, I can bluff my way out of this. But before he goes, like
the idea, again, I love it where he's like, you got nothing, kid. You got snake eyes. And then it doesn't even seem like too like over the head. He's like, tell them what we have here. Tell them what we have here. And he's like, you got snake eyes, man. Yeah. And I was like, that's the name of the movie.
Great as well.
It works.
Yeah, it works, man. It fucking does work. It works.
And it works because you're like, it's a believable and like it's a believable arc for Rick Santoro, where you're like, you genuinely don't want him to do what the thing that he's tempted by, but you totally get that why he do it, and you're like, it's impeccable stuff. I think like this beautiful, like simple.
That's it.
Like
they keep it
fight simple. For the soul kind of thing. You're, and it's like it's and then at the end when he does that, you're like, oh, he's like one last lifeline where he could kind of get out, where he can have what he wants and still like
and like to the wolves. What makes it so good for me, I think, is you said the word simple. There's so many things in it that are like, that's deadly because it's simple. Like the bit at the end where he is leading Gary Sinise to, and it's very blowout with John Lithgow following Nancy Allen, of like he's following Nick Cage, and but the lightning strikes and he sees the shadow of Gary Sinise behind
him. That's great.
And I was like, how has nobody thought to do this in a movie? I was like, I don't ever remember seeing this in a movie, but it's so fucking simple and like,
so effective.
He sees it and then he's like, oh shit, keep going. You know, and like, and I'm like,
and even Gary Sinise looks up like, oh fuck, like that's blowing my cover a bit here.
Was I made? He's still just walking forward. Look, I'll just keep going. And it's like, that kind of like simplicity makes it like so much better, as opposed to people trying to be too clever. You know what I mean? Like when people try to be too twisty or too clever, and you're like, okay, fuck off. And I know we're talking about a movie that has about 10 different twists and turns, but they're all very, one, explainable, two, character driven, and three, really at the end, it's not that convoluted.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
it's essentially a fucking false flag or whatever.
Like you would think on paper, if you were describing the movie to someone, you'd be like it seems like it shouldn't work, but
yeah,
you know, everything together it does work. It's like, and then, like instead of that, at the end you're gonna find out 40 minutes in, and then it's pretty much a different movie altogether. And then this, and that, you know, like if you were describing it, you'd be like, what? you know, but like, it just when you see it all on screen, I'm like, it's like you said, you have the director, the it's written well, it's acted well, you're kind of like,
I had planned to watch it on Saturday with my wife, she'd never seen it, and I got a bit of a fucking dicky tummy, so I was in bed early. Aww. So we didn't watch it together. No, I wasn't saying it for that. Aww, now, Andy, Terry. But I appreciate it, but I was in bed early, didn't watch it, and then I watched it, she was in bed early enough last night, so I watched it on my own, and I woke up this morning and said that I was like, I'm actually raging that we didn't watch it together on Saturday, because I was like, I think you'd fucking love it. Of just like that kind of, for somebody who, like, she's sick of me being like, let's watch this fucking 2 hours.
I was
going to
say, she was probably delighted.
No, but like,
I got away with one. I got away with one. He didn't make me watch it.
But this is one of the ones that I'm like, you know, you just said you fucking liked it. Like, it's one of the ones that, like, well, I made you watch the fucking 2.5 hour movie that you hated, but this one would actually have been a fucking home run. So, like,
honestly,
Terry,
like, exactly. Me and Kerry, when we're watching movies, like, generally, if I don't like it, like, Kerry likes it less. And so, when, if ever I say Terry's recommended a movie, she doesn't want to hear it. She doesn't want to hear it anymore. Like, I'm sorry, his track record, these are probably epic movies that, like, you two would absolutely love. But like, when we're watching them, it's just like, I'm like, no, look. And like, I almost have to preface it, but like, right, Terry did recommend it. However, I have heard it's good from other sources as well.
I've burnt through all the classics with you. You know what I mean? Like, I've burnt through recommending all the nailed on classics.
I think you should leave.
Great show. I think.
Or I'm thinking of ending things. I'm always getting
them wrong.
Well, that
was for the
podcast. Thinking of ending things.
Did you like that movie, P?
I haven't seen it for me since. I will. And you're shaking your head.
I mean, you'll probably actually love it. I just didn't get it. Like, you'll probably get it and therefore like it, but like,
I don't know. I'm thick. Like, I like movies. I'm pretty thick.
I was angry. That's one. Like, that's the one out of all. We've been doing this iteration of the podcast for a few years now, and that's the one that's made me proper angry. Where I was only saying to Terry, like, I'm in prison here. Like, just how long is this on for? I'm like, I had tapped out 30 minutes in. I'm like, when? I'm like pressing up on Netflix every 2 minutes. Like, how long is left? You know what I mean? I'm just like, this fucking, I'm so tapped out. I'm just looking at it.
These are long
miniseries. What was that under?
That was under Netflix.
What's so great about Netflix.
Netflix original movies. And it was it was to kind of see the premise. I was saying was, I was talking to a few people and it was like, oh, I cancelled my Disney Plus, I cancelled my Prime, but I kept me Netflix. And then I'm looking on Netflix and I'm like, why does everybody keep Netflix? Why does everybody have Netflix? Because there's not, like, I don't watch Stranger Things, but like, that's their big fucking TV series or whatever. There's not a huge amount of like TV, like, if I'm watching Netflix, I'm watching it for Seinfeld, you know, like, but so I said, maybe we should look at like the original movies they do and see if it's actually fucking worth, are they in
Terry's ones were more like the Oscar,
like,
noms.
I picked Roma, I picked Mank, I picked Thinking of Ending Things. What else did I pick? I picked fucking
I can't
pick the White Tiger, but that was a bit like, I was trying to throw you a bone there and it wasn't, that was okay.
It's not a bone,
but yeah, I picked the ones that I was like, because they're desperately trying to win the Oscar, you know what I mean, like,
whereas mine were more like In the Tall Grass, no one gets out alive, you know, like, just these dumb,
like,
fucking,
but I will say about that, like, it made me realize that, like, there is a place for those horror movies you would see in Extravision that you would never have heard of. Like, everybody's heard of The Exorcist, but nobody has heard of The Matriarch. You know, like, this movie, this video, it's like,
straight to video.
It's like, oh, the grandma of a family dies and is possessed by a demon and comes back to life and tries to kill everyone. And you're like, okay. And like, I could see something like that being made for Netflix today.
Yeah.
They're like, here's 10 million. Go make me this.
That's where they're
content.
Being made now.
Yeah.
And that's what Andy picked.
Well, look. Should we tie a bow on this one?
I'm delighted.
Get our outro.
You liked it. And I was saying to Andy, I had a feeling you would like it, Pete, just because, like, when he said, oh, look, he's going to go with Snake Eyes, we can't do Bringing Out the Dead, I was like, fucking, we can talk to Palma. Brilliant, like, you know?
No, it's, I genuinely, like, I was like, I once toyed, every now and again I'll get out like the urge to do my own podcast. I was like, Brian the Podcast, where I just do
Hell yeah, man.
I did stealth pilot for it.
I did blow out there. I've done Snake Eyes. I Mission Impossible was on TV fucking a little back, and like, I don't know, like, that the best scene in that movie for me is when it's fucking Tom Cruise and your man Kittredge sitting across the table from each other, and they're doing these weird fucking canted Dutch angles. Like, let me just see if you come around the room with me. Like, he's 4, 5, 6 or whatever. It's like, you haven't seen me upset, Kittredge. And I'm like, fucking yeah, like, filmmaking, man. Brilliant. But I was looking at his filmography and I was like, haven't seen The Untouchables since I was like fucking 12 when I watched it with my dad. I'm like, maybe that was the fucking due to go back to that. Like, Carlito's Way I wasn't mad on it the last time I watched it, but you know, there's kind of, there's ones
I Carlito's Way is my favourite.
Is it? Wow. Yeah,
I love it. No, Untouchables, I adore. I love all the gangster flicks, but like, Carlito's
Scarface
Way.
Scarface is another one that like I've always been like, I understand that people go mental for it, but like, it's compared to the bigger, like Godfather, Goodfellas, whatever like that, like, it was always lower tier, where some people are like, oh, it's the fucking best one. Another one that I'd want to maybe go back and revisit. He's got fucking good stuff there, like.
Oh yeah, like he's kind of got this amazing thing where his instincts are like so outside the system. Like, so see some like Raising Cain or Sisters or something. They're like so wild and like kind of pulpy and crazy and like kind of almost like hold the audience in contempt in this amazing way. And then, but then he's so good getting something like, I'm teaming up with a writer like David Mamet or David Kep, like with The Untouchables or something like that, or like Carlito's Way, and just making these like kind of lush, epic Hollywood flicks that are so satisfying in like all the traditional ways, but still have amazing like De Palma touches. So you kind of get, and Mission Impossible is another example. Like, he's going to get the best of both worlds there. I'd
love to see him do, you know, to somebody, because Ford Coppola sold his fucking wine vineyard to make Megalopolis or whatever his new movie. Obviously, De Palma might have a wine vineyard to sell to self fund a fucking $150 million epic, but I'd love for somebody just to be like, here's $60 million, go make your movie, go make another fucking movie, like.
I think he will. He did, the last film he did got taken away from him, and there was all kind of money issues with Domino.
Domino, yeah.
Yeah, apparently he got, but apparently like there's glimpses of his old
him there. Like, that's the worst. Oh, yeah. That's the worst thing about it today. Like talking with Sam Raimi, you're fucking mining for gold with in this system now at the moment.
Yeah.
Netflix gives him some money to fucking make something like.
I was going to say, just as we're talking now, this podcast would probably be significantly bigger if you two guys were actually the hosts of it. And there's actually legitimate movie fans would actually listen and hear two guys who actually know what they're talking about.
then there's no dynamic two lads agreeing with themselves.
That's what, like, yeah, true, yeah.
That's what Tony said, where it was like, you need me and Andy. Because if there's two Terrys, I was like, yeah, it's like fucking Paul Thomas Anderson and Tarantino on coke talking about movies.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. No one wants to know. Gonna, Fiona Apple.
Exactly, yeah. Fiona Apple wants to kill herself, like, you know.
I tell you, I get people messaging me, Terry, privately, telling me, you know what, you're dead right, it was shite.
Yeah, well.
Just saying.
Name them, shame them.
Never.
Yeah, they don't exist.
Too scared to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. Right, well, let's get into our ratings. So, Pete, what would you give us out of 10?
I'm gonna go fucking, like, I feel like a wild man. I go like
do it.
8.5.
Wow. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
I loved it. Like, I was kind of dazzled by it. Like,
surprised in a way that at I how fucking expect. Good it is. Yeah. Like,
I was like, that's a fucking flick now.
Yeah, isn't it? Like, it's a fucking movie. Like,
I would give it a 7.5. Which,
yeah, that's good for you.
For me, that's pretty good. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed it from start to finish. So which is a rarity on this pod. But but I would say, give me your rating, Terry, and then we'll maybe put it in.
I'm going to give it a 9. I'm going to put it up there at Raising Arizona.
Scathing for you.
I have a joint with Raising Arizona in the best of the cages that we've done so far. Ahead of Face Off, ahead of The Rock.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills with Raising Arizona. Everyone loves it. I was baffled.
Hated it.
I hated it so much.
Do you know what? I I really like it, but it's a bit much. There's bits in it that are a bit much.
I feel like it is blasphemy to say, not at all, but
it's still like it's hilarious and cray crack and
so inventive and like
so no it's like it's I know it's an incredible film. I've been like devil's advocating it here, but, and like Sam McMurray is just one of the great
swingers.
Well, I would go Face Off. I would put this probably ahead of The Rock. I'd say Face Off, this, The Rock, Raising Arizona. That, that's
I was thinking of The Rock actually watching it, because the whole like military, like pissed off military people. I was like, oh, that was obviously a thing in the '90s.
Gary Sinise is given good Ed Harris in this movie. I think Ed Harris in The Rock is one of the best performances in an action movie ever.
It's incredible. I can't, every time I think about that blooper where he's doing his monologue in The Rock and he's so mad, he blows a line, he drives his boot into a big like steel table in front of him and annoys him.
I haven't seen that either.
Like,
I was literally a kid watching the bloopers, like, but like it's just Ed Harris
intimidating, Gary Sinise is giving a
it's like Ed Harris light,
but not in a bad way, like, no. You know what I mean, like, you know, but
still,
like,
refreshing,
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I was saying in Face Off, maybe we should do this for every movie, who's the Ed Harris of this movie, because I thought Nick Cage was the Ed Harris of Face Off and Gary Sinise is the Ed Harris of Snake Eyes.
Problem with The Rock was that I didn't think you needed Nicolas Cage in The Rock to make it good, whereas you needed him in all the other ones. You know what I mean, like, I think Nick Cage was a little bit miscast in The Rock. But you need the rest, somebody. You couldn't you, make
you
it
need,
without.
You need somebody, but we're trying to say who do you?
He didn't need the weird character. He didn't need to be weird.
There instead,
like I was saying last week, any of the 10 actors around that time that you could have just.
But you're not giving me a name.
What did we say last week? Christian Slater.
No, not the fucking low after Broken Arrow. The fucking low energy from Broken Arrow.
Someone. Who did we say?
He didn't say anybody, because you just said any of the 10 that are dead. Whatever. Yeah.
Keanu Reeves, but someone less attractive. You can't be attractive.
You want to see Dick Cage or Connery. You want to see that mad gumbo there.
Yeah, that chemistry.
Good speed.
Well, look, can we get our plugs in here, Terry?
Go on then.
All right. You can find us on Twitter at WSGAPod. You can find us on Instagram at What's So Great About Pod. Where you find links to everything we do, including video stuff and the Patreon.
Oh, the Patreon. Thank you, Andy. Over on the Patreon, we have our two tiers that you can pay for. We got your pay what you want tier. It's literally minimum.
I regret it so much. I get so annoyed when someone signs up for €1.
You can literally pay €1. And for that, you get...
And you sleep at night.
You get 4 episodes a month. You get access to all our back catalogues of our What's So Great About MCU, What's So Great About 90s Action, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willie's Flops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies, and then the ones we put out on a weekly basis. That can be a bunch of top fives. You got top 5 needle drops, top 5 soundtracks. We did top 5 Premier League footballers there recently. Top 5 Disney songs, a bunch of them, and then there's a bunch of it's a good time. Screenplay pitches to one another. There's loads going on over there, and then so that would make you a hungry heart if you pay €1. If you want to pay €5 a month, you're a big shot, didn't you?
Like the Billy Joel, Bruce Springsteen references there.
Yeah,
I got the Bruce one. Yeah.
To a lesser extent, Billy Joel's Big Shot.
You get everything that I said there for our $5. Plus, you get a bonus monthly Q&A question only for our $5 backers. And you get all of our video content here. So once Pete signs the release, you'll be able to see his lovely mug there. But if you can't afford... to pay whatever you want, literally €1.
Can't afford 25 cents a week, yeah.
You know what you can do for me? You can do me one thing else. You can give me a rating or review. Now, Andy.
Yeah.
In this movie, they went to a hotel room number 3517. I want you to get rid of the three. I want you to get rid of the one. Get rid of the seven. That leaves a five, and I want a five-star review.
Was there a five in there?
3517. They got off of
3517.
435.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a really five-star review. Yeah, nice one, man. No worries. Fucking the amount of effort I put in.
You would have been all good up on that watchtower, Mike Stern.
Yeah, it's fine.
So, Pete, have you anything you want to plug before we go?
Just Peter J. McGann on the socials. Not Peter J. McCann, as I didn't want to be. And check out GUTF with Andy's brother.
Didn't even talk about it.
So Pete,
hilarious people.
Were you writing on it, Pete? I saw
writing and performing in a couple of scenes.
I saw the
spoof morning show. It's funny. It's very funny.
It's really
I saw
good.
The one you did there of the
Royal Correspondent.
The Royal Correspondent. I couldn't think of the word correspondent. Yeah, very good.
I think one more sketch now in later episodes, and that's me. I think it's hard to do it so long ago, but that's the thing I have coming out these days.
Brilliant.
And that, just keep an eye on the old socials. I'll be doing bits on that and all the rest of it.
Always good stuff.
And listen, stay tuned for Brian to podcast.
Yeah, I tell you, man, you really
guest.
Should.
If you need a guest, I'm right here.
I'll tell you my calls. There, he's helping you.
That's what I need. More fucking time.
No, I did not say that. I said yes.
So listen, Faye, Peter McGann wants me to host a podcast with him. He's like, what?
Like, it's a chance to talk real movies, Faye. I've got to do it.
What does this pay? Well, nothing at first, like everything, but we'll get there.
Like everything.
He knows a shit, Faye. 3 hours an episode.
Yeah. That's the danger now.
It's like, we're going to record at 2 a.m. It's fine. We'll work around it. Like. Okay. All right. Now, Andy, what do you got to say for the folks?
Folks, thanks for listening. I love you.
Oh, and before we go, big thanks to Neil Murray Music for our theme song. I'm going to try and make sure I mention it for every episode.
Should we do it at the start, after the theme
song? Yeah, well, whatever, man. And we'll see you guys back here next week for Bringing Out the Dead with another special guest. Once again, a big thanks to you, Pete. Thanks for coming on. It's an absolute blast.
This was lovely. Good reason to watch a film I hadn't seen in a long time and had kind of
gotten
its virtues.
That's why we do it. Fucking yes.
On that note.
Town of pain, you could be the lucky one. Fate turns on a dime. The only thing that will change are the lights when they get brighter. They replace the sun. A drowning man.